This is Gary Shavey with Resurgence, doing an interview with Dr. Vodi Bakum. And Dr. Bakum, you are also a professor and a pastor and just kind of all out do ministry, speaking engagements, all those things.
Yeah, there's a lot on the plate.
Yeah. And so, but you're originally like an L.A. guy from what I understand, too.
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Okay, but then now you're in Texas?
Yes, sir. I'm in Houston.
Now, is that that's not the buckle of the Bible Belt, right? That's just part of the belt?
It depends on who you ask.
Right, right.
But yeah, definitely. I would classify it as part of the Bible Belt.
Why don't you first share with us maybe some of the things you do with as far as being a professor?
Yeah. Well, I teach cultural apologetics. I teach most frequently at the College of Biblical Studies here in Houston, and also adjunctively at places like Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and I've taught at Southern Seminary and a couple other places like that as an adjunct, but mainly here in Houston. And I usually do that in the fall, teach a biblical worldview class or cultural apologetics class. So that's mainly what my teaching schedule entails.
In the church you're in is where?
Grace Family Baptist Church.
Okay.
Just planted it, I guess, it's been about a year and a half. I started a year ago, April.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's about a year and a half old now.
So going into the pastorate is a new thing then?
Not really.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I've been preaching for 18 years, and I've spent 16 and a half of those years as part of a pastoral staff. You know, and a lot of time is teaching pastors. So this is, sure, I'm a local church guy. Always have been a local church guy. I just happen to have the privilege of doing a lot of itinerant work, and that's where most people know me from. But my heart and my passion has always been the local church.
So this kind of dovetails into talking about your book, The Family-Driven Faith, that just came out this summer, Doing What It Takes to Raise Sons and Daughters Who Walk with God. Now, this is not an uncommon theme for Christian writers. What drove you to write this book?
Several things. And you're right, it is a common theme. Unfortunately, it's a common theme from the perspective of pop psychology. And most of the books out there on children, on raising children, they come from the perspective of psychology. And we just sort of, you know, use psychology as the grid and maybe throw scripture in to kind of validate the psychology that's being used. This book is written from an expositional perspective. This book is really an exposition of Deuteronomy 6. What does the Bible teach us about doing family, about raising our children? Also, I was motivated by the fact we're currently losing between 70 and 88% of the young people raised in Christian homes and going to Christian churches by the end of their freshman year in college. And so when you look at the alarming rates at which young people are walking away from the faith, coupled with our plummeting birth rates, not just in the culture, but in the church as well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that in a very short while, we'd be looking at catastrophe.
Mm. Which I could see you're teaching your class on understanding, in some ways, current worldviews and apologetics in some ways is dovetailed into, okay, how do we raise our kids?
Absolutely.
Knowing these things.
This is very much a cultural apologetics book. And it's interesting because a lot of people, even publishers who are interested in publishing the book, would ask that question. Now, this is a, you know, I understand this. I see this and this is great, but why are you a cultural apologetics guy doing the family thing? And a lot of the reason that we ask that question is because we've bought the lie. The lie that says, if you want to know how to be saved, ask a pastor. But if you want to know how to raise kids, ask somebody who's trained in the secular human quasi-science of psychology. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Right. Which does pretty much answers the some of my next questions here. What makes the difference between your work and others? And what your book is answering is basically that, is let's take it from a totally different paradigm here. A biblical paradigm, not just...
Yes.
Right. So which would definitely differentiate between some of the... Yeah, in some ways, maybe some other books, famous books that are out there that tend to go towards the clinical psychology aspect, yeah.
Right.
So as an African-American, are you directly trying to write to more of a holistic cross-ethnic church, or addressing some issues even in African-American home?
You know, the book is written from a more universal perspective. There's a lot of me in the book, and our family in the book, and our experience. So in that regard, there is, a taste of some of the race-specific or ethnic-specific issues that are dealt with there in the book. But the book is written from a universal expository perspective.
So has either way, have you been... has there been a bit of backlash from your work? Hey, you're not addressing it hard enough, or, you know, I was just more of
I wouldn't say that there's necessarily been a backlash. Mm-hmm. Ironically, this book has kind of, subdued some of the backlash. I've been talking for years now about the failures of youth ministry. And I've been talking for years now about the failures of government education. And there's been a great deal of backlash as I've talked about those things. And as people, he says this, he believes that, type stuff. But with the book being out there and having an opportunity to lay this out in a holistic, comprehensive, biblical perspective has really kind of quelled some of the backlash that's been out there for a while.
So what are some of your critiques of youth ministry and the social settings? Just kind of give people a taste of, connecting the dots, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, one of the arguments that I make is that youth ministry is one of the symptoms of the problem. I'd say that I basically have just three minor issues with youth ministry. Number one, it's not scriptural. You cannot find anything in the Bible that would even remotely suggest the systematic segregation of people by age. That didn't come from the scripture. That comes from the government education system. Number two, I believe youth ministry actually works against the biblical model of family discipleship. And number three, it hasn't worked. Since the advent of youth ministry, late 60s, early 70s, the number of trained youth professionals has grown exponentially, but our youth baptism rate and our youth retention rate has declined steadily over the same period.
And so, basically, through your research, you come to the conclusion that the church has done somewhat overall a poor job at developing godly families.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've done an incredibly poor job at developing godly families. And the strategy that we've taken has actually usurped the role of the family and has actually crippled families. And so we've created this spiritual welfare system that says, we're trained professionals. Please don't try this at home. Now youth pastors are turning around going, my job's hard because the parents are not doing what they're supposed to do. Well, of course they're not, because we've told them it's not their job. There's been a codependency there that has really been detrimental to both the church and the family.
Oh, certainly. I mean, that's the way I was raised, was the church will take care of the spiritual side, will take care of the work ethic and getting good grades at school type of thing.
Right.
So what has been the feedback as people have? You're actually doing seminars, too. It's not just the book, Family Driven Faith. It's you actually
right.
do seminars. What's been the feedback from people that have really been embracing this biblical concept and biblical foundations for raising their families?
The feedback has been incredible. The overwhelming response that we've seen is individuals saying, I feel like the scales have been taken off. I understand what's going on now. And we get a lot of emails from people who've said, hey, we've started family worship, we've started catechizing our kids, we've started this or that or the other, and in a very short period of time, we've seen radical transformation. The feedback has been tremendous. Even churches who are beginning to go back and reevaluate their philosophical approach to young people and to teenagers and to the families of teenagers, there's been a tremendous response even there. So, it's really been almost overwhelming.
Yeah, in some ways, and you can help me clarify, what I see is this book is in some ways creating an evangelistic foundation here, and kind of speaking in those terms, how do you see the families in the future being evangelistic?
Yeah, it really is, and I'm glad you point that out, because one of the things that we've seen in our church, for example, our church is a family-integrated church. We don't have any kind of age segregation in our church at all. Our church is built on this Deuteronomy 6 philosophy discipleship in and through homes and equipping families to do what the Bible calls them to do. And also our evangelistic strategy runs through there as well. And we're teaching people how to use hospitality evangelism, for the lack of a better word, and bringing people into our homes to share with them, you know, a meal and some fellowship and the gospel. And there are a few things that are as attractive in this culture today as a well-ordered family. Not a perfect family, because there are none of those. But individuals in our culture don't know how to be married. They don't know how to raise kids. They don't know how to interact with one another within the context of their family. And when they see people who have the aroma of Christ and are operating in a biblically functioning family, they want to know, what do you have? You know? Mm-hmm. And so it's an incredible opportunity to talk about how the gospel not only saved us from our sin and from eternity in hell, but the gospel is also shaping our culture. And it's sanctifying our families, and the gospel touches every aspect of our lives. So it is incredibly evangelistic in that regard, but also within the context of the home, as we do the hard work of worldview evangelism, as I like to call it, you know, not just, you know, sort of 3 points in a poem, you know, walk the aisle to the altar, but a kind of addressing the gospel to every aspect of our children's worldview as we raise them, as we train them, as we educate them, as we catechize them, so that they have a holistic understanding of who Christ is, what the gospel is, and how it impacts every aspect of their life.
Mm. Yeah, sure. It's part of the taste and see that the Lord is good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple of times now the ideas of how kids have been growing up in different worldviews. What did you say? And again, this is probably to whet people's appetite as far as even digging in and trying to understand what you're addressing. But what is it? Some of the few prominent worldviews that some of the kids are holding as they come into college, and kind of in some ways college, right, is where they start getting out on their own and start formulating their own thoughts. And
yeah, it's interesting. College is where their worldviews are finally able to express themselves. Their worldviews are formed long before they get to college. A lot of people blame college. And it's not that college is undermining the worldview. The worldview is shaped, you know, much earlier than that. For example, a child between kindergarten and 12th grade spends over 14,000 seat hours in school. 14,000 seat hours, where the primary worldview in our government education system, and more than 85% of all Christians use the government education system, the primary worldview is that of secular humanism. So 14,000 seat hours being trained and inundated in secular humanism, but you're going to church and you have your parents who are saying, don't do this, don't do this, Jesus wouldn't like that. When you finally leave home and that authority structure is no longer there, how are you going to operate? By the rules and the do's and don'ts that your parents gave you, or by this worldview that's been formulated over 14,000 hours? And the answer is the latter. You operate according to that worldview that's been formulated over 14,000 hours, and that's what we're seeing.
Mm. Well, especially since those are the answers they need to give, too, to, when it comes to grades or
absolutely.
Papers. Or
absolutely, absolutely. And so we have people who are, they're functional atheists in many ways. We think that there's, one example is we think that there is this dichotomy between faith and science. We think that there's Christianity on one side and science on the other. And so kids will go into their science class and believe wholeheartedly that they have to put their faith on the shelf in order to be serious students in science. Because secular humanism is the worldview with which they've been inundated. They have no idea that it's the Christian worldview that actually gave rise to modern science. Most young people have no idea, because that piece of information doesn't fit into the secular humanist worldview.
Mm, right. And simply you're suggesting, as parents engage, even if a kid is going to a public schools or whatever, is simply engage them so they can see the fullness of it rather than just a sliver of history.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm suggesting that every Christian parent run as fast as they can from government education system. And I make the argument in Family Driven Faith that Christian parents have an obligation to give their children a Christian education. We cannot, as believers, continue to render unto Caesar that which is God's. My child is not Caesar's. My child is God's. And so I'm not going to render my child unto Caesar. And if we continue to render our children unto Caesar academically, we need to stop being surprised when they come home as Romans.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, point well taken. So in some ways, how do you see the church, if they can't get the seminars, how do you see the church probably even using this book, The Family Driven Faith?
Well, one thing that's happening is a lot of churches, you know, pastors are getting a hold of Family Driven Faith. They read it, and they contact us wanting a copy for every man in their church. That's one thing that we've seen. They want all their families to read through this book and to read through these principles and to get a hold of this information to start the discussion that has to happen. Because a lot of people have called us asking about what we're doing, asking as though it's a program issue, you know. And this is a paradigm shift. It is a complete paradigm shift. So a lot of them are using Family Driven Faith as kind of a springboard to start the discussion about some of the basic fundamental paradigms that need to be changed and the ways of thinking that need to be changed.
Well, I do hope that more people do pick up the book. I definitely agree with you that the family, marriages, are just another way that God can show his light before men.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting, and one of the things we talk about in the book is the church ultimately is a family of families. God communicates to us who he is using family language, Father, Son. He communicates to us this relationship between Christ and the church through what? Through marriage. He talks about the church as the household of faith or the family of God. With salvation, he refers to as adoption. So it's not like this family on one side and church on the other. The church is a family of families. Every human being is part of a family. So every member of our church is part of a family. Benevolence, for example, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, when Paul's telling the church how to deal with benevolence, what does he do? A widow comes in with a need. The first thing you do is contact her children. Because the family is the mechanism that God's given us to first and foremost take care of those needs. So there's really not this false dichotomy between the church's mission and the family's mission. The church ultimately carries out her mission in and through these families. And so the church, being a family of families, operates sort of in a symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah, Americans are really good at really dividing up their lifestyles almost and put them in modern boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's an issue that even when we look at even just worship and how we worship and or worship God and all we do. So.
Yes.
Is there any last comments you'd like to express before we end here?
You know, just how grateful I am for being able to have this conversation and for groups like yours paying attention to what's happening here with this book, which is not just about this book. It's about the larger issues at stake. There are very few things as pressing as this issue of the number of young people who are falling away from the church at alarming rates. And so I just want to thank you for the time and attention that you've given to just let people know about this little piece of the puzzle as we try to address this broader issue.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and again, I think that part of Resurgence is for us to be a resourcing movement, and this definitely adds a great piece. And I think you have a pulse on not only young people, but at the same time, well, the whole analogy of seeing dead bodies float down the river. It's like, well, let's go up the river, see who's throwing the bodies in first.
Yeah.
I think this is what you're doing here with this work. So appreciate your effort in putting it together. So.
Amen. Thank you, brother.